It's one-on-one. I'm Charles Wolforth here for another Coffee House Conversation in Midtown. Today with someone who became sort of an overnight sensation on the internet. Jeannie Devon writes the Mudflats blog, which was read by, what, a couple hundred people a day? Right. And then suddenly, boom.
A couple hundred thousand people a day.
Yeah. And that must have, and it was when Sarah Palin was chosen
right.
for the vice presidential running mate to John McCain. How did it feel when you woke up in the morning? I guess you woke up in the morning and looked at the number of people who had checked into your blog.
It was pretty amazing. Well, I woke up in the morning, you know, the same way everybody else did, with sort of, did you hear, you know, sure. the news? And my sister was calling me from the East Coast to tell me that Palin had been nominated.
Did you have trouble believing it? That's what I remember.
I did.
Sort of laughing, like, oh, that's a great April Fool's joke.
Well, she said, did you hear? And I always have my alarm tuned to the radio. And so I sort of tried to rewind in my head because I had heard something. And I said, did Sarah Palin just get nominated? Was that a dream? She's like, no, it actually happened. So, yeah, so I went downstairs and I, at that point, had about 250 readers a day, which I thought was, you know, pretty awesome.
Because you're something. Just a regular person who's just writing her thoughts on the internet.
Just for fun. You know, I never actually expected anybody to read it. So the fact that there were 250 people reading it just blew my mind right there. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe not all of these people are from Alaska and, you know, people don't really know a whole lot about Sarah Palin. So, you know, maybe they would want to know what somebody, just random person living in Alaska would think, you know. So you're not getting it filtered through the news. It would be like having a friend, you know, in Alaska and you call them and say, you know, what's the story, really? And so I just put out my opinion of what I thought that was. And I sat down and ate my eggs and typed up, you know, what stuff about Anwar and polar bears and things that I would imagine.
You thought you were writing to 250 people, basically.
Right, and maybe a couple of them were outside, you know, and would be interested. And so I published the piece. It took me about 45 minutes, and I put it up. And that went about my business, you know, put on a load of laundry, came back, and there were literally thousands of hits already. And I just stared at the screen thinking, I must have done something wrong, you know, refresh. And then there were a couple hundred more, and I just sat there clicking refresh and watching the numbers go up, and by the end of the day it was 64,000.
Wow.
And that was just my first.
So how were they all finding you? Do you have any way of knowing that?
There was a point where if you Googled Sarah Palin, my blog came up like the third entry. It was like after the state of Alaska, it was there, because once somebody found it and started sharing it, that just became, you know, the source. So for about 2 weeks before the mainstream media got up here, you know, people were checking the Daily News, obviously, and other, you know, mainstream media sources in Alaska. But as far as, you know, blogs went, I was kind of the go-to place, like it or not. So I kind of sat in front of my computer for 3 months eating cereal and writing about Sarah Palin.
But you weren't necessarily a journalist. You didn't necessarily know her. I mean, what did you do that connected?
I think it was probably those two things. It was, you know, I never certainly claimed to be a journalist. I mean, I enjoy writing and, you know, I've been told I'm good at it, but I never, you know, I'm not a trained journalist. And I'm not a political insider, and I didn't have any, you know, axe to grind, and I was just me. You know, it was just a person. And I didn't mind if people said, you know, you're crazy, we think this. Okay, well, you can think that, you know, right. But I think I just came across to people as, like I was saying, like a friend, like just a regular person. Because I think sometimes, you know, you read the news and it becomes out of necessity, out of time constraints and word constraints. It's so limiting sometimes that to have somebody who can just sort of not worry about what an editor is going to say or how long a piece is and can just kind of go, there
it's
it is.
It's just personal. It's just like,
right. It's like getting a letter.
Yeah, it's not a big thought process. So,
right.
Just taking a step back, you had a gift store in the mall downtown,
yep.
And you were just writing emails about your political thoughts, and somebody said, hey, these are good. You ought to put these on a blog?
Yeah, I was writing to a friend of mine, actually, who had done some blogging herself, and, you know, I would just sort of do my little political download, you know, this frustration or that idea or, you know,
getting
whatever
it
was.
Chest.
Right, and she's, you know, in Texas and going, I don't know about Alaska politics, but you're making me really interested in this. You know, you really ought to have a blog. And I was like, what, you know? And I sort of knew kind of what it was, but, you know, she sent me to a couple places and said, you can set it up really quick. And so it was just a lark, really. I mean, when I first started with it, so.
So, and then it kind of suddenly, did it kind of take over your life at that point when you realized how yes. many people were listening?
Yeah. Well, you know, when you have 200, 300,000 people every day, wow. you know, going, you kind of feel an obligation to say something.
A little stage fright at
right.
that point?
Well, I tried not to think about it, really. And it was, I mean, you remember that time. It was so fast and furious. Wow. And yeah. what I would do is just read through all the comments, which sometimes were up over 1,000 per story, mm-hmm. and see what people wanted to know. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they'd say, this is really great, but what about that? You know, what's her relationship with Ted Stevens? How does she feel about, you know, creationism, or all these questions that people had, and it would give me ideas.
Now, did you already have the answers to those questions?
I kind of did. I mean, you know, anybody who really puts their mind to sort of following politics as a hobby, you
You're
know, would be able to answer
junkie,
that.
Basically, right?
Huh?
You were already a political junkie?
Yeah, pretty much. So a lot of it I knew, some of it I didn't, and I'd need to do, you know, some research and find out, you know, and I would be as honest as I could in terms of answering people. And you know, there were times when people said that, you know, oh, she wants to ban Harry Potter and blah, you know, and I'd say, relax, yeah. you know, let's tone it down. So, I would try to keep things, you know, truthful and honest. And
Now, when that all, I mean, it looks like Sarah Palin's sort of thing is over. At least, I know a lot of people think, wow, enough, right?
Right.
Did the readership of the blog, sort of the Mudflats blog, go down as she left the news, or did it sort of?
Oh, no, it definitely went down, and I, you know, expected that it would. It went down initially a bit when mainstream sources started, you know, started picking it up, and I kind of had a decision to make. I was like, okay, I can stay all Sarah Palin all the time and, you know, keep sort of the national audience of people who, you know, are still interested. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of not. I mean, after, you know, 3 years of writing about her and writing a book about her and all of this, I'm kind of done, you know, yeah. like Schaefer Cox trial, yay, you know, or Don Young or Ted Stevens or Pebble Mine, you know, there
plenty to write about.
There are so many other things.
So your readership has become more Alaskan.
It's become more Alaskan, but I'm actually surprised at the number of people who have stayed from the lower 48.
Do you know how many?
It's hard to tell with
where
the way
from,
that the metrics are, but it's certainly, you know, in my commenters and in people that email me or interact with me on Facebook or Twitter, it's, you know, there's a lot of people from the outside, and they all say, you know, well, sort of, we came for Sarah Palin, but we stayed because, right. Wow, you know, Alaska politics is really kind of an interesting...
Well, your writing has to have something to do with it, too. It's not, I mean, if it wasn't good writing, they wouldn't be interested.
Thank you.
All right. Now, a lot of people would think, okay, you put out a product, and suddenly hundreds of thousands of people are using it. Wow, you must have made a ton of money.
You know, I made absolutely, the first 2 years, I made nothing. I was so busy. And I was like, you know, I can sort of stop everything and sort of figure out how to do this and spend a whole lot of time. But at that point, I really felt like, you know, a week to try and figure out the bells and whistles and the advertising and all that is going to be, you know, how many things will that be that don't get to get written
right.
for people. And so I just sort of at that time, you know, said it's not really about the money, you know, it's really more about just being able to say what I wanted to say. And, you know, the store was doing fine and, you know, I had a livelihood and
yeah.
It just wasn't, it never occurred to me in a real way to give up the time in order to make the money, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
So giving up the time to make the money would mean going out and selling ads.
Either going out and selling ads or trying to figure out, you know, how the, at that time it was harder to figure out how to do, you know, Google ads or blog ads, or it was just a more involved process. And I was so new to blogging anyway. I mean, I'd only been blogging for maybe 3 months, 4 months when that had happened, you know, and I wasn't doing it every day, and it was
so
just sort of a
little hobby.
So
what's happening now in terms of the money? Has it turned into a profitable thing for you?
No. Blogging rarely is profitable, but I'm finally succumbing to, you know, wanting to get some kind of revenue back from it.
Right.
You know,
but
because
I mean,
there
are people making money on the internet out there, right? I mean, making money on like at Huffington Post and Politico
right.
and things like that.
Right. You know, and those are huge organizations that have a staff of people, and you know, Arianna Huffington certainly has resources, although she doesn't own it anymore, but has resources beyond, you know, what I do.
To build it in the front. In the
right.
Front,
yeah. Exactly. I mean, I'm really lucky to have some people now that are writing for me just because they love to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And because
Shannon
people
Moore.
Read it, Shannon Moore and Linda Kellen Beagle, both, mm-hmm. And some folks out of state Zach Roberts that was covering the Occupy Wall Street movement, Patrick DiPiulo, who was covering the rallies in Wisconsin. You know, people that I have been fortunate enough to meet that sort of say, you know, the money actually isn't the important thing. I want to be able to share what I see and what I think with people who are responsive and who want to know.
So what is your vision in terms of what you're trying to accomplish? Is it getting your particular point of view out there into the world, or is it presenting a forum, or is it just like whatever happens today is what happens?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, you know, I enjoy sharing my opinion, but I don't think I'm narcissistic about it in terms of, you know, having to have everybody agree with me or even wanting everybody to agree with me. It wouldn't be a very interesting world then. But I really have enjoyed the community that's come from it and the opportunities that I've had to meet people and to hear from people for whom, you know, either reading or participating in the online forum or the comments or, you know, one of those things has been meaningful to them and has gotten them engaged in the process. I had a lot of people in 2008 that were like, I haven't been politically active since the 60s, you know, but now when people can find others who feel as they do, who can spur them on and motivate them to just pay attention, you know.
It's an empowering thing for you and for the others.
Right. Reading. And yeah. Apathy is nobody's friend.
Well, I'm talking to Jeannie Devins today. She's the creator and main writer, I guess, of the Mudflats blog here in Anchorage. Came to fame with Sarah Palin, but has managed to sort of stay in fame since that's gone away. The show is One-on-One. My name's Charles Woolforth. We're here at a coffee shop in Midtown, if you hear the sound in the background. What was the impact on your life? I know you have kids, you're married, you had a business. Did you suddenly have to I'm now in my study at my computer 24 hours a day? Or how do you manage that balance?
You know, for the first 3 months, that was kind of it. I sort of took a pass for 3 months and, you know, my husband sort of took over kid duty and store duty and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, which was really wonderful. And it was, you know, a luxury that I had to be able to do that. But now, you know, I just kind of, it feels like 24 hours a day. I do sleep occasionally, but, you know, it's a lot of work with kids and making sure homework is done and making sure they eat and get to bed and that I write about things that are happening. And, you know, actually going out and reporting on things can take a ton of time.
You know, sure.
I've been sitting in on the militia trial this past week. I mean, I could sit there for 8 hours. Like, I mean, it's good stuff, you know. So I'll go for a couple hours and it'll take me another few hours to write it up afterwards. And, you know, so it's just, it takes more time than people think that it does.
Oh, I know. Well, I think a lot of people have to push back on sort of getting too addicted to online news or forums and that sort of thing. I mean, do you feel at times like, oh my God, real life has got to come in here at some point?
I do sometimes, but I actually really enjoy it so much. I mean, it's something that it doesn't feel like work to me, which is why I'm willing to put in so much time doing it.
Well, and you're actually accomplishing something, as opposed to somebody's just surfing.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So that's been really good. But yeah, I have to force myself to, you know, go for a hike or unplug or, you know, I probably don't do it as much as I used to or as much as I should, but.
Yeah. Well, I remember, it's been a while ago now, but you used to do the blog anonymously. Nobody knew some people knew who you were, but the general public didn't.
Right.
And then I guess you wrote some critical comments about Representative Mike Dugan, and he used his legislative newsletter to out you and say, reveal your identity. And,
right.
What was that like for you personally and family-wise? Were you scared when that happened?
It was really alarming on a couple of levels, I think. You know, number one, because we did have the store and I'd been very careful I think it's just a wise business decision not to be out there politically one way or the other. I mean, there are businesses that do it, but I think it's to their detriment. And so I had tried very hard to sort of keep a neutral
and your,
slant
your blog
on my
is,
business.
Is very liberal, and a lot of your customers aren't.
Although not, it's really funny because a lot of, you know, my liberal friends from elsewhere don't look at it that way.
Alaska liberals or anybody else.
Right, exactly. We're sort of middle of the road compared to everywhere else. So, but it definitely was opinionated. It was definitely critical of Sarah Palin. And at that time, you know, there were people coming out of the woodwork that were just really sort of rabidly, you know, in that camp and really angry at people that you know, didn't agree with them. And I would get nasty emails and I would get comments and like weird, you know, not overt threats, but stuff that really kind of made you go, ugh, I'm glad this person doesn't actually know who I am. So to go from that to, you know, not only do they know who I am, but they know where I work. And I'm out on the sales floor behind a cash register, kind of stuck there, sometimes by myself, for long periods of time. That was, you know, so that was one area where I really felt, you know, nervous and unhappy
but
about.
But other journalists, I mean, like, I think we interviewed Julie O'Malley, her picture's mm-hmm. right there on the thing.
Right.
You know, do you see a difference there?
Well, I think that, I'm sure there is a difference. I think that when journalists get into journalism, they're sort of prepared for it. They have a certain mindset. Like when you get into politics, if you're an elected representative, you've chosen to kind of put yourself out there. And so when I started this, I mean, it's just not my personality to do that. And I sort of felt like it got, you know, my little project at night, you know, my little hobby kind of got taken over. And I found myself in this situation where I was not entirely comfortable. You know, so there was that. And I think, you know, Julie O'Malley can work in an office.
Right. She's not
and if somebody's got to get through, you know, channels to find right. her, you right. know, they can't just sort of walk in and you know, there she is at any given time. The other thing that really bothered me about it, and this would have been the case, it wasn't just personally, it was sort of the just the concept of the thing, was that a sitting legislator would use their own legislative resource, you know, their official state email, as a person who obviously wields a great deal of power and influence. It is one of, you know, one of those up there, to sort of wield that against somebody who is just, you know, a citizen with an opinion. Not doing anything illegal, not doing anything wrong, to sort of decide on his own to put that person potentially, you know, in harm's way, or at least, you know, to sort of as a revenge or as a, you know, I'll get back at you for saying something mean to me. Mm-hmm. That I found really, really unfortunate and kind of
disturbing.
Well,
how do you respond to the criticism? Well, if you have opinions, you should stand behind them, and that anonymous opinion on the internet can be really, you know, out there
and
not such a good thing.
It's certainly a valid opinion, you know, but that's what it is. And, you know, so I would never tell anybody that they can't think that somebody ought to put their name on it. But the fact is that anonymous political speech is protected. I mean, you can look at case law back to, you know, revolutionary times,
right.
you know, Benjamin Franklin had silence do good, and it wasn't illegal. You know, he was taking a pseudonym and he was writing as somebody else. So that is a form of protected speech. But I think when you sort of say, okay, that's my opinion, and now as a legislator, I'm going to act on that opinion and, you know, cause somebody else to suffer for their own opinion. You know, if my opinion was, you know, I choose to exercise my right of anonymous political speech, then that's my right too. And if it had been, I think, a neighbor or a coworker or something, it would have had a different flavor to it.
Yeah.
You take that risk. But the fact that it was a legislator was a bit much.
Now, how did you get into co-authoring the book with Frank Bailey, who was Sarah Palin's aide, who was
right.
then became disillusioned right. and wrote a book mm-hmm. based on a lot of his emails and internal communication? So he gave a real inside look.
Right.
And that was a pretty big national thing that rolled out. I mean,
yeah.
How did that come about?
Yeah, well, that came about, I had sort of, through a couple different channels, ended up connecting somebody that I knew, a friend of mine named Ken Morris, who is an author. He was a Wall Street executive who sort of uncovered a bunch of corruption on Wall Street and became fairly famous for that. He also wrote several financial thrillers, which I didn't even know was a genre, but apparently it is. So he had done that with some success. And Frank had recently lost a couple of authors who were going to be working on the book with him, and that was very public at that time,
mm-hmm.
Frank Bailey. And so I thought, well, you know, here's this person who's looking to write a book, and here's this person who's looking to write a book, and, you know, how could we get them together? And Ken had asked me, you know, do you know Frank, and, you know, throw my name out there if he needs somebody. So that kind of, you know, came together. And then Ken realized, you know, he's from California and he's a brilliant writer, but he didn't have all the sort of background of Alaskan politics. And even Frank was very new to politics. He'd not been, you know, he'd been working at Alaska Airlines before he got on the Palin campaign. So he was not, he didn't have a huge background in knowing things other than just what was in his little bubble, you know, with Sarah Palin. So he felt it would, Ken felt it would be good to just have a different perspective on things. And he knew me. And so he said, you know, would you do this? And I said, there's no way Frank Bailey is wanting to work with me on this book. I would be really, really surprised. And he said, well, let me set up a coffee. And I said, okay, you know, if you can set up a coffee, I'm happy to meet with them. But I don't foresee that they would really want to work with me. And so I met with Frank and his wife, Janine, and we really actually hit it off quite a bit. And the fact that you were just mentioning about Mike Dugan, the fact that I had sort of called out Democrats for bad behavior, and you know, not only Mike Dugan, there'd been others as well, and we sort of talked about that, and that that actually played fairly well in my favor for getting on the project, because they realized that I'm not, you know, just sort of a political hack that will, you know, take one side regardless of whether they're right or wrong. And Frank, you know, is very much that way himself. And so it was a really interesting match, and I had a great time.
It sounds, you know, like a challenging thing to take all this material this person mm-hmm. and three writers involved and bring it in. But the book got pretty good reviews.
Yeah, I was really happy with the end product, and it didn't sound like any one of us, but it also didn't sound like a patchwork. Like, you could tell where different people had written different sections. It sort of was a, you know, somebody would write a section and then it would just sort of make the rounds until it became sort of mixed, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so the book, I think, had a very homogenous feel, but its own voice that wasn't really any one person in particular.
But then you got, I mean, not exactly analogous to the Mike Dugan thing, but again, you got sort of undercut or a secret sort of pot shot taken you on the book too, because it was released before it was ready to go out or something, put on the internet.
Right, yeah, we were shopping it around to various publishers, and our agent had sent a copy of the manuscript to the publisher that was publishing Joe McGinnis's book on Sarah Palin. And so the publisher had the manuscript and gave it to his editor, you know, to look at. And then the editor sort of gave it to him to look at. And, you know, that's not supposed to happen, but, you know, the publishing business has its own sort of, you know, set of ethics, and there are things you do and things you don't do. And, you know, I'm sure manuscripts are passed around on the sly.
Joe McGinnis was sort of developing his book, which didn't get such great reviews.
Right.
And he rented the house next door to the Palins
exactly.
and this whole thing.
Right. Yeah. He was the neighbor. And, you know, and we had been friends at the time, and he took the manuscript and sent it to like every news media outlet he could think of, you know, so people went wow and rifled through and were pulling out quotes and pulling out passages and so yeah, that was
did that
bad.
Damage your product in terms of how your ability to sell it?
Yes, it certainly did to an extent. I mean, we found, you know, there were places that had put the whole manuscript up so you could read it online. You know, and you'd see tens of thousands of downloads of this and know that those were, you know, not everybody, but a lot of those people would have bought, you know, would have purchased a copy of the book. And the publishing industry was pretty rocked by that as well. That had never happened before.
Right.
I mean, you'd never had an incident of that happening.
And there was some legal action that came out of that.
We had talked about some legal action, and at this point, nothing has come of that. And I think, you know, I mean, that's kind of another couple years of life. And,
yeah,
who
needs it? So I wanted to ask you before we run out of time about the changing nature of media. You know, I'm a reporter from way back, you know, and when I started out, the sort of idea of this advocacy journalism that we have on the web was not really there so much.
Right.
And now, an awful lot of what's being done, even in the mainstream media, is this person's point of view, and they're pushing their point of view and gathering the facts that support their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like there's a lack of sort of the basic facts? I mean, the people who are out there gathering the basic information before the opinion makers?
I think that they're really, that can really be the case. You know, and I respect traditional journalism tremendously, and I mourn the loss of newspapers and, you know, impartial as any human can be reporting. It isn't something that I think I would be very good at, simply because of that whole, you know, the word limit, the constraint, the objective eye, because I don't think that I have one. You know, it would be like sending me out to make a, you know, movie in the wilderness where they're like, don't help that wounded animal. You know, you're supposed to remain objective and not, I would be the person out there like, you know.
You're a participant.
I just am, you know, and that's what I am. So I can either do what I do or I can be silent. Those are sort of my two options. But I think that, I think it's really incumbent upon people to do a little bit of research into where they're getting their news, because it's not always news, you know. And I try very hard to not, even when I'm reporting on something in a newsy sort of way, not to claim that I'm, you know, being impartial. I mean, people say, well, that's, your opinion was in there.
It always is. Yeah. Well, thanks so much. This is, I've really enjoyed this.
Thank
my
you
guest
so
today
much.
Has been Jeannie Devon. She writes the Mud Flats blog. We've been here just at the coffee table in Midtown Anchorage. And please join us again next week for One on One.